and welcome to a new episode of From the Honeycomb Podcast. I am your host, Katerina Buranova. Each week, we dive into a blend of topics that resonate with the soul. Whether you're an architect enthusiast, have a passion for wanderlust, want to discover holistic approaches to rejuvenate your body and mind, or are intrigued to learn about Vastu Shastra with a modern approach, you've come to the right place. Join me as I sit down with inspiring, like-minded women from various walks of life. We will delve into their journeys to discuss the challenges and moments that define their paths. So sit back, relax, and let the spark of positive energy ignite your curiosity. Hi, it's me, Katerina. Before we jump into today's episode, I want to share with you something that can change the trajectory of your life. If you are ready to start your own architecture firm but are feeling overwhelmed by where to begin, I understand, because I felt the same way when I first embarked on my entrepreneurial journey. This is why I have created the ebook, The Mindful Blueprint for Launching Your Architecture Firm. This comprehensive workbook contains everything I wish I had known before starting my own firm. From building a solid business plan to creating your brand, The Mindful Blueprint for Launching Your Architecture Firm offers a step-by-step guide tailored to your timeline, whether you're launching your firm today, next month, or in a few years. Dive into essential topics like financial planning, organization strategies, and how to secure your first client, all in one convenient resource. That's right, you don't have to spend hours researching. I have done that for you so you can focus on building your business. And that's not all. With your purchase, you'll also receive an exclusive meditation for business owners, mindfulness tips, a crystal guide for support, and gratitude exercises to help you stay focused and positive throughout your journey. Turn your dream of having your own firm into a reality with the Mindful Blueprint for Launching Your Architecture Firm. Click on the link in the show notes to get your copy today. Now, let's dive into the episode. Today, I am joined by Sarah Sindian, licensed architect and associate principal at KTGY, an award-winning design firm. Sarah has managed a variety of projects from single-family dwellings to high-density podium buildings and mixed-use developments, and she recently celebrated her 20-year anniversary with KTGY. Sarah, welcome to From the Honeycomb.
Thank you, Katerina. I am so excited to be here. I'm such a proud mom and such a proud shareholder now of my company. And when you asked me to be part of your podcast, I just was so excited to share my little piece of the world with you and your listeners. So thank you.
Oh, well, thank you for coming on. I'm really excited for our conversation.
I am too. I am.
So as you know, we begin every episode by sharing something that we are grateful for in the present moment. So Sarah, what are you grateful for?
Okay, so I am grateful for so many things. I am one of those people who have a list of what am I grateful for today. At the moment though, because I just had a leadership meeting at work, is I'm grateful for having recently been invited to become a partner at my firm after 20 years. So I am a partner of my firm. I'm part owner. I've been invited to sit at the table and be part of the decision making as to the future of the company. So that is super exciting. Just fulfilling to have reached that point in my career, something that I've worked so hard for. Because people, I think, can just continue to keep doing what they're doing and project managing or picking up red lines or coordinating with consultants, which is all super valuable work. But for me personally, to rise up to a point where I can make key decisions about the mission and vision of our company and see where the future of our company lies and make our company still relevant 20 years from now is like super important to me. And to provide that financial security for my family is just amazing. So that's what I'm grateful for at the present moment.
Well, congratulations. That's exciting news. Oh my gosh, amazing. And I love that you're thinking about what your role in the company is going to do for the future of the company. And because that's something I want to talk to you about too, is like AI and everything. And it's just, it's amazing the mindset that you're also going into it. Like you want to make a difference, you want to make a change and also provide for your family, which is, it's just so beautiful to hear.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, we always hear about that term being having a growth mindset, being open-minded, and you really do have to be that in order to be relevant because things are always changing. Like you said, AI. I mean, there will be things in our world that will continue to change and force us to evolve. and not only adapt to it, but we have to thrive in it. Mm-hmm. I mean, COVID was another thing that like threw a wrench in everybody's lives, and we had to adapt. And guess what? We came out of it stronger and better. And that's sort of the approach that we take at my company, is that we have to evolve, and we have to push and become better and better, and sort of be at the forefront of the new ideas, technologies that are coming out, because that's the only way we're going to stay a generation to generation firm. And by that, I mean that my company relies on the next generation of people to continue this company moving forward, which is really amazing to offer that opportunity for new graduates that we hire straight out of college and say, one day you can be an owner of this firm and be that part of that next generation who continues the legacy of KTGY. So I thought that was really great when I started working. And I think it's really great now that it actually came to fruition. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like a full circle moment.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
And Sarah, can you share with us what inspired you to become an architect?
Oh gosh. You know, I have to say my mom played a big role in that. Ever since I was a little girl, she would take my brother and I to museums and expose us to art. And also we visited a Frank Lloyd Wright home in LA when I was like 11 years old. And all of those influences play a part in who we become. Our environment will shape who we become and what our interests are. And so I really do think that because my mom exposed me to those things, that it perked something inside of me and I wanted to become an architect. Because as I got older, it just became more and more clear that I wanted to become an architect. When I went into high school, I started taking drafting classes as a freshman year, in my freshman year, and got exposed to drawing and drafting and all those things. And usually at that point in time, not a lot of people know what they're going to be. I knew for some reason that design was where I was going. So I was really lucky. I'm one of the lucky few who knew really early on that this is what I wanted. And when I continued on that path, it just got stronger and stronger. And thank God, because I know a lot of people who continued their path and said, you know, this isn't for me. And part of that path is architecture school. I mean, you know, Katarina, and your listeners probably know how trying architecture school is. I mean, the sleepless nights, all-nighters, cutting your finger almost completely off. I mean, all of those things. And I remember freshman year or my first year in college, and the architecture course is 5 years. That first class, my professor asked all our students, really young, eager, bright-eyed kids right out of high school, right? We're in this classroom and our professor told us, look around you, look at everybody around you, and imagine half of these people gone by the end of the year, because they're just not going to survive. They're not going to make it. They're going to say, this is way too freaking hard. I'm out. I'm going to go do something else. I'm going to be a business major or something, yeah. You know? And he was right. Half of those people were gone by the end of the year. And he said, look around you and imagine half of those people gone, and then take half of the remaining half. And those are the people who are actually going to graduate. So over the course of 5 years, that remaining half, those people will just sort of dwindle off and say, this is too hard. Maybe they'll figure out by their second year, third year, fourth year of architecture school that this isn't for them. It's just getting harder and harder. And then my professor said, take half of that last half, and that's how many people will actually get licensed as an architect. And I feel like that number is not only small, but it's dwindling. I feel like students who are graduating these days don't find that same importance in getting their license as we did in prior generations, which is really, it's really sad. It makes me sad. You know, I sit on the Dean's Advisory Council for the Cal Poly Pomona. So I meet with the dean every couple of months. And we talk about how the professional world connects with the students and how we can provide help to the students. And, mm-hmm. you know, this topic came up. It made me sad that students weren't as motivated to get their license because they feel that they're going to be working for an architecture firm. Someone else is going to be signing the drawing, some principal, some owner. And why do I have to spend all that time studying for exams, taking those exams, paying for that? And for what, you know? So I just, you know, when I took my exams, I didn't like the idea that I could be called like an intern for the rest of my career. I wanted to be called an architect, not an intern. And I can't emphasize enough to the next generation how important getting your license really is.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting topic because I know a lot of also the incoming generation, they feel burnt out after architecture school because it is a lot. And there's that term coined like burnout. And it's like, I even had to take a break between architecture school and studying for my architecture exams. I said, I just need like 6 months to a year where on a Sunday, I'm not in studio or, you know, my nose in the books. Like I need a little bit of a refresh. And then I was able to go and start taking the exams. So I think I wonder how students are also transitioning because it is a huge jump from architecture school, academia into the professional world. That within and of itself is a huge jump. And then one other thing is with the exams is in architecture school, we didn't really have to study as much. We had studio, we were building models, making drawings, doing renderings. And yes, we had structural classes. And for me, when I started studying for my ARE exams, I hadn't studied that much since high school. So that was also something that was just, okay, I have to sit and read a textbook for the first time in like over 6-7 years.
It's so true. Oh, I can't agree enough. I mean, you have to have that mindset and shift in your mindset to say, I'm not doing a case study and then designing a building. No, I'm going to be sticking my nose in a book for hours on end every day for the next few months before I take this exam. And that's what I did. And that's what a lot of people do. You kind of lock yourself up into a room and you come up with a schedule of I'm going to be studying for 4 hours straight, lock the doors, nobody bother me. And everybody in your life, your parents, your family, they have to, your spouse, whoever it is, they have to support you in that. Like everybody's in it. So yeah, I remember those days. And now the number of exams are less than when I, which doesn't necessarily make it easier. I think they're just hard. People ask me, is there one I should take first? Which one's the easiest? And they're not easy. None of them really are easy. You have to really work hard at it. But when you get licensed, when you get that final congratulations, you're an architect, pass your exams, there's no feeling like it in the world. And no one can take that away from you, right? No one can say you're not an architect unless, you know, you become delinquent in your fees or anything like that. But you can't, you won't be called an intern. You know, you don't have to explain what you do for work. So yeah, it's amazing. But it's a grueling, grueling process. And I always tell people, take that break, that much needed break once you graduate school, refresh. But as soon as you can, take your exams because life is going to happen. You're going to get married. You're going to look at you. You're going to have your own business. You're going to have your own podcast. I mean, you're going to have kids. Like life is going to happen and it's just going to get harder and harder to lock yourself up in that room and study and dedicate all that time. So the sooner, the better.
No, absolutely. And you're looking at the room that I was in that I locked myself in. It's now my office, but it took a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for, where you have to like take care of your, not determination. Oh, I'm blanking on the word now, but discipline. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Discipline. It takes so much discipline because there's no one looking over your shoulder hoping that, you know, did you study this? Did you study that? Although I really recommend having an accountability buddy. So I had a friend who was going through the exams with me around the same time. And that was kind of good because we always like, when's your next exam? When, you know, when's my next exam? And that really helped as well. But it's, the exams are definitely grueling and it's sad to see that the numbers are going down, but I'm hoping, you know, also, I think with some of the recent graduates, like you mentioned early on COVID, like that was kind of something nobody was expecting. And then we got through that. I wonder if the incoming, you know, generation is also dealing with how they went through architecture school during COVID. I've had other past guests on the podcast, one recently, Haley, and she talked about how COVID kind of disrupted on how she was going through architecture school because of presentations. You're presenting in person, and then all of a sudden you had to go onto Zoom calls to present your projects and kind of, you know, how that was different. But then she said she learned something from it and she moved on, and you kind of have to take any experience and grow from it and learn from it.
Right. You know, it's interesting because during COVID, we still had meetings with the dean and we would ask, what are the students going through? And they went through hell. I mean, it wasn't only adapting to these online courses that they had no other choice in doing. Everything became online, even studio. Can you imagine studio being online?
No.
They went through that. Students also had a huge financial hardship. There was a time when they couldn't work anymore. Maybe they were laid off just like so many other people and they couldn't afford school. And so we worked at putting scholarships together to help these students continue their and complete their architecture schooling. But gosh, the students who went through school in COVID just did an amazing job. I mean, it's really a huge feat to get through that. But you know, during those meetings with the dean, we talked about what types of programs were out there that could help the students succeed. And there were a number of programs where you can sketch in real time and kind of feel like you have that sense of having a crit and sitting down with your professor and working together and redlining or sketching and coming up with ideas and brainstorming. So there were those things that helped, that really helped. But there is nothing like being together in person. Mm-hmm. And architecture and design in general, being a highly collaborative discipline, it's really important that we are together live in person. Not 100% of the time, not 100%, but a good amount of it, because we're collaborative people. And so at my company, we talked about we're much better together than we are apart. And so 3 days a week, we go into the office and work together. And then 2 days a week, we work from home. Because coming out of COVID, just like everybody else, we found out the ways to become more efficient when we work from home. But we also really cherish the time we have together to come up with better designs and work together to achieve better projects. So yeah, I was going off on a tangent, but I think we came out better and stronger from it.
You perfectly segued in. I wanted to talk more about your firm. And it's great that you've also found a system that works for like a hybrid. You know that you work well together. Let's have people in the office working, collaborating together. But there are efficiencies to working from home with people's commutes and then depending on their lifestyle and if they have children. And so that really, it's incredible you guys came together and created this hybrid, because I think you're giving everybody the best of both worlds, essentially, working from home and working in a collaborative environment.
Yeah, that's so true. You know, coming out of COVID where everybody worked at home 100% of the time, we thought, how hard and sucky would it be to force our people to come back into the office 100% of the time? I mean, 40-hour days, 5 days a week, to go from 100% at home, working from home, to 100% back in the office. It was too difficult of a shift, too difficult of a transition. Well, we found, like you said, efficient ways to work from home and virtually and have meetings virtually. So let's do a hybrid situation. And that hybrid situation, I think, is pretty common for a lot of companies these days. The employees are a lot happier. They have a little bit more flexibility in their schedule. People with family like me, I have two kids. I mean, I appreciate the times when I'm working from home and I have the flexibility to take them to the doctor's office or pick them up from school. When COVID came around, I remember I was 3 months pregnant and I came into the office and all of a sudden HR said, everybody go home right now. And it was like, what's going on? And no one really knew. It was just, we're in a pandemic and there's this virus going around and who knows, it could kill you. So everybody just go home and stay there. So yeah, I really do think that the hybrid work schedule works really well. There are companies who actually have a flexible schedule. And what I mean by that is they've shrunk the size of their office by half or whatever it is. And they now have these a certain number of workstations and people will come in and it won't be your same workstation one day versus the next day, right? So you have a reservation system where you sign in and you're like, tomorrow I'm going to go into work and I'm going to sit right there, and everybody knows it. And what's cool about that is, you know, the COVID situation forced us to think of ways to become more efficient, not only in our processes, but also in our workflows, but how we approach the working environment and have this system where we have open workstations and we work on a reservation system and we save all this money in rent or lease because all of a sudden our office space is down to half. I think that's an amazing concept. I love how people are evolving, you know, based on these situations to become better and finding ways to benefit from it. I think that's really great. And then also with the working from home environment, you know, health and wellness is a huge topic these days. Health and wellness, because so many people, it's sad to say, are depressed after everything that's been going on with COVID, but also other situations, other world issues that we're dealing with. Health and wellness is a big deal. I mean, working on the Dean's Advisory Council, I found out that students are depressed. There's a high rate of depression. I don't know the specific statistics, but you know, their insecurity to getting food that they need, financial insecurity, even their confidence level, like their wellness and knowing that this is the path forward, that what they're doing, what they're studying for is the right path. I mean, their health and wellness is such a big deal. And I attended this health and wellness colloquium at Cal Poly Pomona weeks ago. It was so interesting because it talked about design and how there was a hospital case study done where there were patient rooms in hospitals with large windows that were operable. These patient rooms had natural light, natural ventilation, and it had a direct impact to their health. They took less pain medication. You know, they were discharged sooner. They actually healed faster because of their built environment. It has a direct relationship to health and wellness. So this goes to schools also. So talking about schools and working from home or versus being in the studio, schools that, same thing, large operable windows or a connection to nature, these students got better grades. There was less bullying, you know, there was less depression. So I think that our industry, it's our responsibility to start focusing on health and wellness as a big part of how we design. There's no doubt that that's always sort of been a theme in past years, but I think there's a need in doing that a lot more these days.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you were just reminding me of my studio space. So I went to Illinois Tech and it was Crown Hall that was designed by Ludwig Mies van der Rohe. And it's just a beautiful glass, you know, single story building. I mean, it does have a basement and everything, but it's just above ground, this beautiful single story. And it's all glass all around the exterior. And I think thinking about that and thinking about other studio spaces, ours was, everyone was always, because we'd see student classes coming through on tours and everyone's like, wow, this space is so incredible. And it was because there was beautiful trees and in the spring when they would bloom or you would look outside, there was this huge lawn and it makes such a difference, absolutely, in from school into work as well, especially when you're working in like fluorescent lighting and just in the computer screens and you're constantly looking at a computer screen all day versus when you used to draw more by hand. That's also, I think, a huge impact on us and the future generation as well. But there is something to say about the natural light and it feels so much better. I know when I moved from Chicago to California and when I was working at my previous firm, I could see a little bit of the ocean. We were on Coast Highway. The office has since moved. And I remember just thinking, wow, like this view is so incredible. And I would sometimes just turn around in my chair just to take a minute. And it was such a nice, like, little mental, like, check-in, like, health check-in. How am I doing? Just, there's, like, a stressful moment. I'm like, let me just look out at the ocean for 10 minutes or something and just have my cup of coffee for the afternoon. And it's a nice little reset in your head.
Yeah. You know, I think we need to develop that habit for ourselves, for the sake of ourselves, for our health and wellness. We need to find that little reset, it's like a cup of coffee or just taking a break and looking out your window, whatever it is, giving your kid a hug. I don't know, whatever is going to reset you to make you a more well person because whatever issues we're facing, and we face a lot of problems throughout our day, whether it's project-based or someone pissed us off, whatever it is, it's not as important as we think it is. I mean, life is bigger than that. So I think those resets are super, super important to our health and wellness.
No, absolutely. And one thing I want to talk with you, Sarah, about is AI. Because I know when we first met and we had brunch, you actually inspired me. So I remember we were talking about ARCHICAD and I said, oh, I'd like to use it, but it's so expensive. And then I'm like, I'd like to do some renderings, but how can I, you know, it's a lot of investment for me as a sole proprietor in investing in all these programs. And we kind of started talking about AI and you said, you mentioned to me, you're like, well, it makes sense for someone like you to use AI programs. So I started playing around a little bit more with AI and it's amazing. Like I'll build it in 3D. Like I like using SketchUp. It's easy, simple. So I'll make a 3D model now and I'll put it into the software. And within 10 seconds, I have three options. And it's like, it's incredible. And so it's amazing how much AI can help us as architects, but I would love to hear from your perspective as well, because you have a firm that has a rendering department and a 3D rendering department. How does that affect the future for you and your company and your staff?
Okay. So, you know, we're still trying to figure it out like everybody else. How is AI going to really impact us, and how do we evolve or adapt to this new technology that's coming out? That's the big question on everybody's minds. So much so that we hired a scientist at our company, an actual scientist who specializes in AI. And he's looking at how to streamline our processes and make us more efficient in using AI and how AI can help us, right? So there's so many ways you can use AI to help us in our industry. One is renderings, like you mentioned. Another way is can we use software, AI software, to help us take meeting minutes, right? Because there's so much out there. And it helps us with our time and our money at the end of the day. But we have to do it so that it doesn't expose us legally. Because if you look at, for example, AI software that takes meeting minutes, there are so many components. There's a component, I was looking at it the other day, there's a component in AI software that takes meeting minutes that actually looks at people's faces in the meeting. And it rates your charisma and your interest. It actually can tell by the expressions on your face how charismatic you are about certain topics, and it tracks it. There's like graphs throughout the meeting. And if you look at everybody's graphs, you know, the five attendees, for instance, and there was at this point in time in the meeting, everybody dipped down because their facial expression showed that they were disappointed. You go to that specific time frame and you're like, what were we talking about? I mean, it's crazy what data starts getting extracted, what AI can do. And it can be dangerous because AI meeting minute software also creates a transcript. And at least our in-house counsel, they don't want us to have any kind of transcript because we could say something that can be misconstrued or taken out of context or whatever it is. So we have to decline if our clients actually want to use AI meeting minute software that has a transcript version. But it's so amazing. I mean, the AI software will take clips of the meetings and say, this is when Katarina talked about the updates for the project. And it has just a little snippet of that. And it's so smart. And it's interesting because I'm personally fascinated about using AI for meeting minutes, because it's better than having a separate person on the team sitting there just taking notes, you know, getting paid for an hour or two just to take notes, when I have software that can do the same thing for me. And maybe probably even in some ways do a better job, in some ways do a dangerous job, but in some ways do a better job because that AI software has now organized it into bits and pieces and a summary and all these things that there's no way like one person can do that and generate all that data, right? So there's that. And then as far as renderings, you know, we've played around with AI at the office and said, give me a night shot in a snowy environment with a starry sky. I mean, you can go as far as you wanted to, and it would produce like a pretty impressive image without having spent all that time in Lumion or something, you know? So the opportunities are endless with AI. It's how we use it to our benefit is the question. Where's that fine line where we're using it for good versus we're using it as a detriment to our work? I think the ethics behind AI is a big issue that we're dealing with right now. I think there was a meeting by some of the leaders of AI in the world, like Elon Musk and a few others, about coming to understanding about what are the ethics with AI, because AI is moving so fast, exponentially fast, that we can't keep up with it. And all of a sudden it's doing things we don't want it to do. It's doing things that are unethical. And so there's an ethics like council about how to properly use AI, but the enforcement of it is something that we haven't completely figured out either. I think we're all trying to figure it out right now, but it's potentially dangerously a powerful tool.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And especially like the reason I experimented with it, and I can't remember the name of the software now, but I remember I was looking at their like legal, just like once you purchase their programmer, and then how can you use, because for me, I want to showcase these drawings on my website. I want to say this is my work, but it's not my work. And so I started reading through their legal description, kind of making sure like, okay, can I even say, you know, this was a rendering done by this program, and then I put the ideas in, like, how do you even credit those images, because it's not 100% mine. And so I played around with it. I'm going to give it time to evolve a little bit more before I use it, but it is a great tool even for quick in-house sketching or for me to get an idea of something. So internally, it's been helpful. Personally, I love using ChatGPT I use it for podcast descriptions. So putting together a description for the podcast, or lately it's been helping me with emails. If I know, like you can spend 45 minutes answering an email, making sure you've said everything correctly and how you say it. And so I've been putting into ChatGPT, like, please respond to this email regarding this, this, and this. And then it'll come up with its answer and I'll pick it apart and, you know, make it. But instead of spending 45 minutes on an email, I'm spending 15, maybe even 10.
Exactly. Which and I think there's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. I think there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's fantastic. I mean, there are students out there who will probably use the software to write their research papers, you know, mm-hmm. and that's all of a sudden probably not okay, but where do you draw the line and how do you enforce that? And there's programs out there to cross-check, okay, are the words in this research paper, is it copying from some other existing, you know, piece that's out there? And there's ways to catch those things so that they don't happen, but other than that, you know, it's a really powerful tool, and exploring ways and how it can benefit us and cut our time to a fraction of what it would normally take. All of those things are fantastic, and I'd love to use it. But I will say that I saw a graph months ago that scared me. It said, what professions will AI take over? And architecture was one of them. And I remember thinking, how? You still need designers. You still need a person to ask the client, what are your expectations? What do you envision for this project? You know, what are your goals? And to have a person, okay, come up with iterative design solution to that. But nonetheless, it's one of those professions that AI is supposed to take over. So we'll see. But I still think that we do need designers and architects.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think using AI as a tool will, and I think that's another difference too, is the professions who understand that AI is the future and they accept it and they learn it. Whoever is in that profession that is learning to use AI for their profession will last longer than someone who doesn't accept it and embrace this change, because it's like you have to get on the train now. I mean, every profession I've been talking to, I had a civil engineer on the podcast. I said, how do you use AI? And it's interesting. Like, there are certain professions that it's not, AI hasn't caught up yet. Like, they've been able to use it, but there still needs to be a few iterations before the civil engineer, Danny, she mentioned, she's like, yeah, we'll give it some information, but then we still have to check it because certain things just aren't up to the right, you know, standard or whatever it is, the calculation. So we still have to double check it, but it brings in the efficiency and it's incredible. Like it's been helpful. I've been using it as a tool and also putting my voice to the emails. You know, I don't copy paste. That's another thing. And that's the next generation's going to have to learn. You can't just copy paste. like you can use it as a tool, great, but then you still have to do your own work.
Right, exactly. I think that's a really, really good message. And it'll be exciting to see where this AI road leads us.
Oh, absolutely. And then, Sarah, I want to just touch base on your company as well, because you've been there for now 20 years. And that's amazing, because there's, I don't know many people, especially in architecture, who have stayed at their firm for so long. And, you know, firm culture is a huge thing. So can you share a little bit about your journey with KTGY and how you stayed there for 20 years and your journey for the future?
Yeah, I'd be lying if I said that I didn't wonder what it would be like working somewhere else throughout those 20 years. I mean, it's crossed my mind multiple times. You know, we have a lot of different architecture firms in Orange County and Los Angeles, and there's a lot of firms out there that do great work. And I, you know, I wondered when some of my friends would jump from company to company and sort of get promoted with every jump. It made me wonder, is that the way to do it? But the truth is, for me, working at this company, it's the company that I work for now isn't the same company I worked for 20 years ago, in the sense that we've evolved so much every step of the way that it feels like a different company. You know, to work at a company that is so growth-minded and open to evolving and exploring ways to become better is really a blessing, you know, because it allows me to grow in my journey, in my profession, actually, and personally also, because they support me so much. It's amazing to grow in parallel with the company I work for. I think that's really a blessing. So this company has taken care of me through the past 20 years, and I trust that they will continue to do that. I really just haven't had a reason to leave. They're fantastic in their culture, in their mindset, future forward thinking. There's no reason for me to leave. It's I'm very happy and content where I am.
Well, that's amazing to hear, Sarah. Congratulations again on making partner. And I cannot wait to see what the next 20 years at the firm look like for you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Katarina. I appreciate it.
And thank you again for coming on the podcast, for taking the time. And where can listeners find you?
Oh, they can find me. I have a LinkedIn page. You can shoot me a message there. That's probably the best way to reach me.
Perfect. I'll provide a link in the show notes. Sarah, thank you again.
Thank you so much. That was so much fun.
Thank you for listening to this episode of From the Honeycomb Podcast. As we conclude, I want to express my gratitude for joining me in today's episode. I hope you have found it insightful and inspiring. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate, review, and click that like button so you never miss an episode. And don't forget to share this with your friends. You can follow me on Instagram at From the Honeycomb Podcast, and you can also further your support of From the Honeycomb by visiting the Patreon link provided in the show notes. Your contribution helps make more episodes possible. And lastly, don't forget to subscribe to my monthly newsletter, A Spark of Positive Energy, that comes out on the 7th of each month. Thank you so much, and see you next Friday.